One of my favorite people to have on this show over the years is Sean Springs, who was clearly one of the best players during some of the down years, even though some of his years here in Washington were productive years with Coach Joe at the helm. Sean has been doing, I know you've been out at camp observing, because Smoot was on with me last week and said, if you want to talk to somebody about Trey Amos, I don't see Sean get very excited about people very often, but he is pumped about Trey Amos. And I said, yeah, you know, typically you'll get really upset or really animated when the team that you like isn't doing the things that you think it should be doing. So did they get it right with Trey Amos? But more importantly, how do you know this early?
Oh, man. Hey, thanks for having me on.
You know, I love having you on.
I know we usually get in trouble too, but we're in a good space this year, man. We're not going to get in trouble. Right. Hey, Trey Amos, man, the reason you know is, you know, for a cornerback or any position, usually a skill position in the NFL, you know, when they go from college and they're great players and then they go to the NFL, the game is a little, you know, sometimes it might not be the speed of the game that can get a player, but sometimes it's the amount of information, they're thinking too much, they're not moving full speed, or they're moving too fast, out of control, or, you know, just, you know, just not themselves. When I see Trey, it's just like, oh my goodness, I'm looking at this kid, and I'm just like, he looks like he's been in the league for 10 years. He's patient at the line of scrimmage. Every receiver in camp, obviously, like Terry, he jammed every receiver. He was under control. He could run with them. I mean, he just was excellent, man. I mean, there's a very few corners I've seen in the game that just look like they've been there. Usually they have a pedigree or something. Like Patrick Surtain is one that comes to mind. Like he came into the league and he was already a fifth-year pro, right? Trey Amos looks like that, and I'm just impressed.
So you mentioned something like patience. Like there is what, like a calmness, like a confidence, poise that you've noticed in addition to the physical part?
All of that. That the physical part, there's a lot of guys that are physically capable of doing a job. But when you see a guy who goes up and he communicates, he's talking, and then he gets up in front of the receiver, he's not look like he's rushing or he's, you know, in basketball, they talk about, like, you get sped up. Like, you watch college basketball compared to NFL, up to the NBA. The NBA guys look like they're just moving so slow, under control, know where they're going. Same in the NFL, right, especially the skill position. They don't look sped up. They look under control. Look like they've done it. They take the right angles. They take the right – their footwork is excellent. And you just can tell right away with that guy.
Interesting. You know, when you talked about basketball, one of my favorite players to watch over the last, you know, 10, 12 years, because you cannot speed him up, and he plays methodically, and he plays at a pace that is very unique, is DeMar DeRozan. Like, DeMar DeRozan just gets to his spot. Mm-hmm. There's nothing, you know, urgent. There's nothing abrupt. There's nothing overly athletic. It's just like his incredible patience and craftiness, I guess.
Luka Doncic is another great example of that, right? We don't want to go down the
road. Kawhi is that way.
Patient. Yeah. So you see that in football as well.
Yeah.
You know.
So what's the next step where you where your early beliefs are confirmed? Like when he starts to play real games, what will tell you that you are 100% right in your initial gut instinct?
Oh, I don't need to see him. I don't need to see him playing any games. I just my experience, right? My experience of playing with all pro DBs, playing with guys. I've seen 1,000 guys come in camp. You know, 13 years, I've probably seen so many defensive backs, and I know what it feels like. I know what it looks like. I just, it'd be like you telling me something about a guy who understands the production of the radio. He's just comfortable with it. He's not all over the place. Like, we doing a break of this. It's just comfortable. I don't need to be confirmed. Like I can tell you, like, it's certain things are obvious. Like, I don't need to tell y'all that Jeremiah Smith is a day one starter in the NFL and he's probably going to be all pro. You can see it.
Yeah.
Right? It's not, it's obvious.
Yeah. for those of you who don't know, he just mentioned the best player in college football, and we'll see him on Saturday at noon against Texas as Sean's alma mater takes on the number one team.
But he was the best player as a freshman, right? He didn't get sped up. He looked like he was Marvin Harrison already, right?
Yeah. You know, it is interesting.
Go ahead.
No, it's what you're describing applies to a lot of things, not just sports. Like when people get to that point where they are comfortable and they can just slow down and, you know, and think clearly, and there's nothing that's sort of making them, you know, frenzied in any way. Like I can tell you, like doing what I do, one of the best pieces of advice that I got early on is even if you think you're going slow, slow it down even more. And that is, it's just interesting to hear you say that. You know, the other thing about this position, you've told me this before, Smoots told me this before, is that it's very much a position where players begin to thrive with more experience because it's also a brainy position. So are you suggesting that he's going to start off being great, or you just know eventually he'll get there?
I'm suggesting that from day one, he's going to be great. I mean, I'm suggesting this, and this is a big statement. I'm suggesting from day one that most of the balls might go towards Lattimore. And I love Marshawn. He's a Buckeye. I am telling you, like, this kid is that good. There's a reason he's left corner in the NFL. It's the reason why he's a day one starter. We hit it. We on the last AP and Coach Quinn in the draft, and we could talk about all the guys they drafted. They've been spot on. You know, they just plug this guy in, and you know, only thing we got to worry about is, you know, 4 or 5 years when the contracts come up, who we can keep, because they've been spot on with the draft picks. Look at Mikey. Mikey's a guy in it. Mikey's a guy you put on the inside. He was towards the end of last year. He was one of the best corners in the league, and now you move him inside, and I mean, the secondary is legit, man. Like, Quan Martin is a rising star, or a guy who, you know, could be a Pro Bowl type player. You know, you saw that late in the year, you know. Didn't see it the first year. It came on the second year, but now you can see the kid is just, you know, Washington's secondary is amazing, man. And I could talk to the whole team, but it really stood out to me the way they just completely flipped the offensive line and the secondary. Totally different groups.
So tell me about Lattimore, what you've seen from him. I mean, that's a pretty, you know, out there statement. You're coming from, you know, a major experienced viewpoint. But to say the balls are going to be going towards Lattimore, not the rookie, tell me what you believe Marshawn Lattimore can be here in year two with this team, or really in, you know, his first full season.
Well, first of all, Marshawn is going to be much improved from last year because, you know, a corner with a hamstring, you know, and this and trying to learn everything, it was a very difficult situation that he was put in. But Marshawn is a savvy vet, smart. You know, he's going to make plays. You know, he's healthy this year, so you're going to see a really, really good corner. I think you're going to see, when I say the ball's going our way, I mean, like, usually when a rookie comes in a league, there's a lot of times they just pick on a rookie. I don't think that the case this year, meaning that Matt, they're going to sit there and just throw at Marshawn, because obviously he's a pro. Like, both of the corners are good and the nickel's good. You got to pick and choose who you're going to attack, whether it's the safeties or whoever it is in the back end. What I'm saying is that Marshawn is going to be really, really good too, but it won't be like it's obvious that I'm going out and they're throwing at this guy.
Right. So you think they line up against the Giants with Amos and Lattimore on the outside and Mikey Sanristil in the inside as they had envisioned when they drafted him?
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. And Neighbors is, you know, one of the best young receivers in the NFL. I mean, arguably all those guys from LSU. Just amazing. But it's not like it's going to be like, well, we got to match up with Marshawn and this. No. Trey Amos is going to be fine. And I'm not saying he's not – like, Neighbors can get at anybody in the league, whether you're the number one corner in the league. But what I'm saying is it won't be like we got to switch him off because this guy's not ready. No, he'll be ready.
We're talking to Sean Springs, and we have focused on the corners and really the secondary. You've already added what you think Quan Martin can be, and he played so well at the end of last year. Last year, the issue more than anything else was stopping the run. Do you feel comfortable that they will be improved in that area?
Yeah, I think so, because now, you know, we talked about on this show that front and coverage goes together, meaning, like, you know, you can't really be a good pass defense if you don't can't get rush, and you can't be a good run-stopping defense if you don't have the ability to put eight men in the box and play man at times and put the safety down as an extra free hitter. So I think with the confidence that Joe Witt has with the guys in the back end, where he feels like I can put those guys out there and have one-on-one coverage in the slot and on the outside, and a safety that's, you know, both safeties can go sideline to sideline, Harrison as well as Quan, I feel like he can be more exotic with his play calling, more aggressive, you know, on first and second down, you know, first and second down, which are typically rundowns, for him, be more aggressive. All right, I can bring the safety down. Now I can really blitz my linebackers now because I feel good about I got a guy who can cover in a slot that I need to help out in the pass game. So it's going to be very exciting to see Joe Witt's play calling and how, you know, he has the freedom to do more because he has the flexibility. And they're deep. You know, you're talking about guys like Jones can come in, who was a great man-to-man guy in New England, and, you know, and Noah Igmanagi last year. Noah was awesome at slot, so they're deep. So it's not a fall-off either if they have to go to the second and third group.
Give me another player that stood out to you defensively when you were out there watching him.
McGee.
God, I was going to ask you about McGee. Because they love him. Tell me what you love about him.
Boy. Hey, what we knew about him coming out of Temple, then he got banged up. But you're talking about a guy that just has that physical presence. You know, kind of like, you know, like when you see today's game, you see like a Fred Warner out there for San Fran, and you look at him, you're like, that guy's a linebacker, right? You look at him and you're like, hey, man, that kid can do everything. So
does he play like Fred Warner? Is he that fast? Is he that athletic?
He's athletic. He's explosive. And I was, you know, we all were questioning that coming off the injury. And he just looks so confident, and he's physical. And, I mean, obviously he's, you know, the replacement when Bobby decides to hang up his cleats. But I just when you see a guy with presence at linebacker positions, like he's just not out there. He is a guy who's physical. He can run. He can drop. I mean, I was just like, wow. You know, I feel that way when I saw Frankie LeVoux last year, right? When I saw Frankie, I was like, man, I don't remember this guy being like that. I follow Washington State and the Jets. But when you see Frankie, you're like, oh, yeah, he's an animal, right? This McGee could be that guy. You see, he has a presence about him. He's fast. And, you know, it's just – you know, looks confident, man, and they did a great job of bringing him back. And I mean, he just—I think he only had 5 or 6 snaps in the last preseason game, but he just has a presence, man. When you see him, when you think of like a linebacker, like I'm gonna go and get off the bus and we'll see what your linebacking group. He's one of the first people that you show.
Interesting. So on LeVoux, I think you could argue he was the second or third best player on the team last year, pound for pound. What is his next level? Is it superstar? He was a second-team All-Pro last year in the league. Does he have a chance to be a dominant player defensively in this league?
I think so, and the reason why I think so is because last year, you know, we saw when he blitzed a few times, he just, you know, just was reckless. Like, I mean, he was just, you know, just tearing up the backfield, pushing people back, just getting to the ball. He's violent. He can rush. And that's kind of surprised me. I had no idea he was that effective in the pass rush. Now think about adding a Von Miller, right? You got a Von Miller who people say, well, does he still got it? He still had the fastest first step last year. Von can come in at any moment where you least got to know because he can put pressure and he can get to the quarterback. Even if he only gets you 6 sacks, he's a presence, right? So now you got Von Miller on the opposite side of you, right? Now, where are you going to double team? Who are they going to chip the bat on third down, right? I'm thinking about third down.
Yeah.
So the next level for him is, you know, he can be a superstar because he might end up with 7 sacks and, you know, and so many tackles and a few tackles for a loss. And and they use him the right way. You know, obviously, Coach Quinn was in, he was in Dallas with Michael Parsons, right? So when you think about Frankie Louvu, all the things that he was doing with Michael Parsons, moving him around, Frankie's that guy. Frankie, so the next level for Frankie could be he's first team all pro. Wouldn't surprise me at all, especially now that you got a presence on the other side.
Who's going to lead the team in sacks this year?
Whew, man, that's a tough one, man. I don't know yet. I don't know yet. I think it's going to be, you know, it may be pretty balanced. I don't know if, you know, I don't see a 12 or 13 sack guy, you know, but do I see a few guys with 6, 7, 8, maybe, you know, maybe 2 or 3 guys? You know, I'm not sure on that just yet.
Two players that I wanted to ask you about, and then we'll quickly talk about the offense. I've just always been a Duron fan, and I know that he hasn't always played up to his ability. He hasn't always been consistent, but I think his best is elite when he's at his best. What kind of year do you think he'll have? Which this isn't technically a contract year, Sean, but he could more likely than not, with no guaranteed money the year after in 2026, he could kind of go the same way John Allen went without a big year. What are you expecting from Payne?
I think Duron's going to be excellent. Again, the line has been upgraded. I don't know if you guys had a chance to get out of camp, but out of camp, but Kinlaw is a grown man right beside him. So, you know, when you think of Duron, you know, and oftentimes you eat it, you know, is you don't get the glory because he's getting double teamed. He was a bigger guy. Jonathan was in there, but he was – Duron was a big guy for the run stopping and stuff. And now you put Kinlaw in there with him. I think Duron's going to have a great year, and you're right. I think players understand that, you know, with the defense being elevated, obviously they're bringing in guys like Vaughn. They drafted Trey in the first round. You saw your partner, your other Alabama guy, get moved out, and you understand if you're part of this defense, they're trying to build a special defense. There's a standard. I think that you know what's the term? All tides rise, or something like that. Yeah. You know. I think that he's just going to be have a great year. And you're right. It's in the back of his mind. I got to perform this year. Next year's not a guarantee, so I got to perform. And I just think that, you know, the defense is going to be a little more aggressive first, second down. So it takes the pressure off him because you might want to double team, but they might be shooting the A-gap or something with a Bobby or Frankie or someone else, like, coming, right? So you just can't just key and always have the double teams on the big boys up front.
What is your impression of Johnny Newton?
I like Johnny Newton, man. Johnny's a little undersized, but he got that. He got, for me, I laugh, man, because he got that Warren Sapp and Cortez Kennedy kind of body. When you see him out there, and he's like, hey, you know, especially beside Kinlaw. Kinlaw looks like he ate him. but what you see is a guy who has moves. He's undersized, but when I say the Cortez Kennedy, Warren Sapp type guys, for the fans out there, like, he just gets it done. He's sneaky good. He's sneaky better than you think, right? He might not look like this massive big guy, but he'll make a play in the backfield. He'll get a tackle for loss. His motor is good. He'll get skinny in a gap and make a play, right? So he's one of those guys where if you underestimate him, you'll look up and he have a pretty good stat line. He have a tackle for a loss, you know, half sack, and, you know, a couple tackles. You know, he's one of those guys to get in and spell those guys.
Was he the best defensive player you played with, Cortez Kennedy?
Ever? Of all time?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, him or I would say Cortez Kennedy or if Sean, a young Sean Taylor probably would have been if he would have continued on the way he, because he had that top five type talent, right? So yeah. Cortez was just unreal. I mean, if people don't know, Cortez was Defensive Player of the Year on a 3-13 team.
That's really incredible.
Yeah, so he was special. Yeah. Cortez was very special, man, and rest in peace. But he was a pretty good football player, and I think you know Sean Taylor would have been, you know, Sean remind me of a young Benny Blaze. I don't know if people remember. Benny was a guy who influenced me, and I saw, and most people don't even know how good Benny was in Detroit, how many years he was all pro, like physical. But Sean probably would have been, from a talent perspective, Sean probably would have been one of those guys.
All right, we're talking to Shawn Springs. Offensively, this was one of the most dynamic teams in the league last year with, you know, the quarterback leading the way. What do you expect in year two? Do you buy into any of the, you know, sophomore slump for Jaden Daniels, the people that believe in that coming to fruition?
I don't believe in the sophomore slump for Jaden Daniels. In fact, you know, when you think of Jaden Daniels, or you think of guys like C.J. Stroud, who the year before came and had a wonderful year, Jaden Daniels is one of those guys, man, where, you know, I don't know if you guys heard, but he was like, I'm taking a wristband off this year. And we talked about it yesterday on the podcast. To me, that meant, like, I'm feeling more confident in my relationship with Cliff, where they can throw more on me, I can have more input on the offense, and we're going to expand on what we did last year. So for me, Jaden Daniels, and the way he studies, last one to leave, first one in the building, the way he has command and his poise. Another guy we talk about, poise, we all talked about it last year. See, the guy looked like he'd been in the league for 5 years. Jaden made some adjustments. I just think that there's no sophomore slump for him. The X factor for him is, how do we run the ball? We upgraded our line. We were able to move some people in, and Larry Tonsil came in, and we drafted Conley. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what the running back rotation looks like, right, who makes a team. And, you know, but you got to suspect that the running game is going to be better. We got bigger up front. Terry signed, and you know, I think that was critical. Terry has to have a good year, and Noah has to be healthy, right? Zach Ertz looks like he went back to 8 years. I saw Zach in Arizona training hard when I was out in Arizona, and we had a chance to spend some time together. And I was just like, Zach, man, I don't know what happened, but man, you hit the fountain of youth. Zach Ertz is a monster. The offense can be good. Now, it's going to be challenging. The Giants have upgraded their defense. Philly is going to be excellent. They're bigger front. There's no answer for Jalen Carter other than stay away from him. Their defense is going to be good. Some people are just that dominant. He's Aaron Donald. But Dallas, you know, without Michael Parsons. But, you know, and the league has a chance to see Jaden now, right? So they're going to – you know, he has to expand in the league. It's going to be better prepared for, you know, what he can do.
You mentioned Noah Brown, and Noah Brown gets some conversation from fans, but not a lot of it unless he's injured. Right. And then it's like, well, we really need him. What makes Noah Brown necessary for this offense?
Well, because nowadays you got to have, you know, the outside guys who can win. It's going to be a time where they're going to get after your quarterback, get after your offensive line, and they might lean the safety over Terry. If they can play man, lean over top of your number one, and somebody at safety is good enough to at least cover Zach Ertz, we got to have another guy that can win. There is no team that goes deep into playoffs without two number ones. Name one.
At wide receiver?
Right? At wide receiver.
Well, the Bills and the Chiefs last year. Well, the Chiefs last year didn't have a number one for much of the postseason.
Well, the Chiefs are different. The Chiefs got the greatest.
Okay, well, you asked me to name one.
Okay, yeah. That's true. They had, before that, when they were winning, they had Tyreek Hill. And the reason why the Eagles was able to tee off, I guarantee it would have been a little more different if Tyreek Hill plays for that Chiefs.
Sure, yeah.
Right, but the bottom line is, you're absolutely right. You name the Chiefs.
The Bills, had they made the Super Bowl, certainly would have been a team without a number one, with two number ones.
Yeah, but they didn't, and they haven't made the Super Bowl.
Right. True.
Cincinnati has.
Cincinnati has, but they didn't have in that Super Bowl. They didn't. Who did they have? They had Chase.
They have Tosh Boyd and Pickens.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah, real quickly.
Tosh Boyd. Okay. Anyway, go ahead. But the bottom line is you need another number one.
What is the upside for this team? Best case.
Well, the upside is, you know, let's be honest. For me, the upside is we go to the NFC Championship again. And the upside is all path to the Super Bowl right now is in our conference. I don't believe that there's a better team, there's a better built roster than the Eagles. And I'm honest with that. I'm not saying we can't beat them, but we got to be very honest about how good the Eagles, their roster is right now. So we did all the things necessary to beat that team. We got bigger up front. We got better in the back end. We got two corners or three corners who can cover. We got safety players better. Our linebackers, we got more depth. We're bigger up front. We went got on defense front. We got Kinlaw. So we did everything to beat the guys we have to beat in our conference, which is the Eagles. And people are probably doing on the other side, they got to be, what are we doing to beat Kansas City, right, in the AFC? Right? So in the NFC, I think that road goes through the Eagles, and I think this team should be very, very competitive. And for me, it's going to decide what happens in the playoff. Von Miller could be the difference. We're going to need a guy to make a play in a big moment in the playoffs. We need that guy. There's a Von Miller or somebody else like that.
Buckeyes win Saturday. They're 2-point favorites over Texas.
I thought they had Texas, you know, 53% chance of beating us. I think it's going to be a tough one.
The point spread.
Okay.
Buckeyes are favored at home by two.
Oh, it's going to be a close one, man. The Texas team is very good. I will say this. We've reloaded. We got some guys. and it's good. I know the Texas defense is very good. But that Jeremiah Smith is special, man.
Ooh. Yeah. And he can't even come out after this year.
And he can't even come out. I think it was Todd Platt or something. He's like, he would have been the first pick last year.
He would have gone before Cam Ward. We would have gone number one.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I hope you're well. Thanks for doing this as always. We'll talk at some point during the season, I'm sure.
Oh, sure, man. And we didn't start no trouble this offseason.
No, it's because we've got a good team to talk about. Whenever you've gotten in trouble with me, it's because the team hasn't been good and you've been right. So easy to talk about them right now. The most fun we've had. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it as always.
All right, thanks, brother. Yeah. All right, bye.
So I mentioned earlier in the show that I was on a radio show this morning, and the host asked me, well, what's the best case for Washington this year? And I said, going to the Super Bowl. They've got the best quarterback in the NFC, and as long as they're in that postseason, he's going to have a chance to take them to the Super Bowl. I believe that. I really do. I'm curious as to what you think. What is the best case for this team? We now know, we'll know for sure who's on the 53, but, you know, we're talking about roster spots 49 through 53. We know the crux of this roster. Terry's now in and under contract. He's going to be in anyway, more likely than not, but he is hopefully now in a much better mood coming in. What is the best case? Am I nuts to have answered that question, the Super Bowl? What do you think the best case is?
New offense. Here's a handoff to Debo. The longtime 49er. Nice cutback and brought down at the 45.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, brought to you exclusively by the law firm Condori and Murat. Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and welcome onto the show from the Your Washington Commanders. 29-year-old wide receiver from South Carolina. A Pro Bowler and an All-Pro in his career, and one of the most anticipated offensive weapons they've added in years going into the season. Debo Samuel is with us on G&D. Debo, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing great, very buddy. So, rearview mirror now, seventh training camp and preseason. You've gotten through it. Are you one of those guys now where you're just happy it's over and you can get to the stuff that matters, or do you still enjoy that part of it?
I still enjoy that part of it, but it's more, you know, I enjoy, you know, getting ready for these Sundays, and it's a thrill now, man.
What do you think your role is going to be? I mean, you carry the football, you're on reverses, you're going to throw some, I mean, catching passes. Like, how do you see your role?
I don't know, man. You guys, you know, got to wait till the seventh to see how this is going to work out, man.
Do you have a pretty good feel already, or does that start now in terms of
We got a pretty good feel. We got a pretty good feel for sure.
So how different is this offense then from what you were used to with Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco? And did you have any relationship going back with Cliff Kingsbury at all?
Not too many. I just remember playing against him. You know, coming from a very lengthy, wordy playbook to, you know, one word telling a lot of guys what to do, a lot of different, like, signals and this, that, and third. And, like, it's, like, kind of hurry-up offense. So, kind of, like, that's the difference.
How long does it take to get comfortable? I think it's a skill we kind of forget about as, you know, pudgy idiots in the media like us. But, like, it's a whole new language to your point. It's like, you know, what that thing meant doesn't mean anything in this new language that you got to learn. How long does it take to really feel comfortable and up to speed?
Not going to lie, it just started slowing down probably like a week or so ago.
Yeah.
Debo Samuel and Grant and Danny here on The Fan. So, going back to the trade, you obviously have a relationship with Adam Peters. I mean, was that one of those where – like, you wanted Washington, or they just came to you and it lucked out that it was a good fit? How did that all come together?
So, me and my agent got on a call after John Lynch and the guys granted me permission to seek a trade. We got on a call, and he asked me what my top three was, and Washington was one of the top three. And, you know, me not even thinking at the time, just, you know, I was just in the motions of, like, naming, like, places where I wanted to go. Over here, they had a really, really good quarterback, just went to the NFC Championship, so, like, you know what I'm saying? They're building something special here. So I was like, why not? And then my agent and Adam Peters got to talking, and then we got it done.
But you obviously knew AP. I mean, did you guys have a good relationship, or were you just kind of like two guys in the same building?
Yeah. We had a great relationship for sure.
And so you mentioned Jaden. Our perception sitting in studio talking about this daily is that this has become a destination place to play because you've got an elite quarterback and, as you said, a team that won last year. Sounds like that was the case. I mean, was that the top priority for you? Why did they make that big three list for you?
Say it again?
Why were they one of the three? Is that a Jaden thing, or was there more to it than that?
You know, they had just, like I just said, they came off NFC Championship. You know, got a great quarterback, great team. Played against Cliff. He was the offensive coordinator over there and the head coach and, over there with the Cardinals. And, like, you know, I'm not too far from home. Some of my family live in Baltimore, so it's like, oh, that plays a role for sure.
Debo Samuel with us here on Grant and Danny. So your 2021 season, Debo, is one of just a juggernaut of a year. It was unbelievable. You were there. You probably remember it. 1,770 yards from scrimmage, 14 touchdowns, et cetera. How close to that do you feel right now this minute?
I feel real close. You know what I'm saying? I came back in, you know, the best shape I've been in. Just, you know, ready to rock. Brand new offensive system, so, like, came in ready to work and just show them that I was able to do a lot of things that, you know, they didn't really know that I can do by, you know, not playing against me as much. But, you know, came in ready to work, and we here. We're going to see how the season goes.
You're entering, what is it, I guess year seven now. How much better are you at certain elements of your game that you've kind of picked up and improved over the years than maybe rookie Debo Samuel?
I think I'm about better than every aspect right now.
That tends to happen as you learn the league. And you work on your skills. What about the element of the game where you're just figuring out, too, what you got to do for your body and what that's like now and what you've got to do to get ready versus early in your career? How much has that changed?
Like, early in my career, you know, you're just a young kid and you're just like, you know, you can just go through the motions. But I had a future Hall of Famer right now. Wes Welker was my coach my first 3 years. And he was like, bro, you're not going to get it. Like, how important offseason is for us taking care of your body and, you know, doing the little things that I don't know about. He's like, you're not going to get it till after your third year. And then, you know, that's when it started to pick up for me, taking care of my body and know what offseason looked like.
The voice of Debo Samuel of the Commanders here on Grant and Danny on The Fan. With Terry McLaurin finally back now, I was thinking about you a lot these last several weeks because this was kind of a thing that happened all the time in San Fran, whether you went through it or Brandon Ayuk or Bosa or Trent Williams. And eventually, end of August, guys show up, they go play, and you guys win football games. Were you kind of chilling like, hey, I've seen this. This is going to be okay, guys. He's going to be back. Like, what was your mindset on this whole thing?
I knew it was going to get done. It was just a matter of time. You know, this is how things go. I think, you know, both sides did a great job towards all that go, but not to get into all that. But I think both sides happy, and we just hearing happy Terry here and ready to work.
Was it a greater challenge not having not only Terry but Noah Brown, who's coming back from injury as well, out there as you're trying to get your rhythm and timing and you know, working off each other? Is that tougher to build chemistry without those guys on the field?
Yeah, but, you know, at the end of the day, like, I'm in control of the things that we do. And I went out there every day and just tried my best to get better and better.
I know it's year one for you here with this group, and you haven't even really had everybody on the grass together until today. But what is your expectation for the offense? Maybe right away in week one, and how different might that look come, say, week 10 points. When you guys are clicking on all cylinders?
We're going to score a lot of points.
I like that a lot. At this point, what's your favorite thing to do on a football field? Obviously, score points, like score touchdowns. That became pretty clear in that answer. But are you? Is it catching a pass? Is it throwing a block? Is it running between the tackles? What's your one seed?
It don't matter how it happened.
All right, Debo, thanks for the time, man. We appreciate you.
No problem.
Thanks, bud.
Debo Samuel of the Commanders on Grant and Danny. Pro bowler, all pro. Excited to see what he can do for this offense this year.
We are less than a week away from the start of the NFL season. And, of course, he had a major trade yesterday. Micah Parsons goes to the Green Bay Packers. Been talking a lot about that today. You can vote at Junks Radio in our poll today. Most people believe that the Packers won the deal. You get the superstar. Now, ESPN pointed out there have been other deals like this. Khalil Mack was traded to the Chargers.
Was it from the Raiders to the Bears or from the Raiders to the Bears?
I thought it was Chargers-Bears that were the two teams
involved.
Maybe
it was Chargers-Bears, yeah. Definitely Bears. But
And
he was traded for two first-rounders, wasn't he?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So it's not unprecedented. I think Jalen Ramsey, same thing. But huge deal. And joining us right now to give us kind of the Cowboys perspective is Gavin Dawson, host of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Hey, Gavin.
Yep. Morning. How you guys doing?
We're doing all right. You know, we dealt with the Terry McLaurin hold in for weeks and weeks and really months. You've been dealing with this Micah thing, though, seems like for well over a year.
Yeah, it's been a while. And I mean, there is a sense of a relief that they decided to move on. I don't think anybody really thought this was, you know, possible that the Cowboys would move on from a superstar player. Mm-hmm. You know, they really haven't. So that was a big surprise. And maybe, you know, a change. You guys are just talking about the Steelers and how GM Omar Khan has sort of shifted his philosophy on team building for, you know, a really landmark franchise for the NFL that maybe was stuck in the past with team building. And we're kind of, you know, if you're looking for a silver lining here with the Cowboys, it's that, you know, maybe this symbolizes a change in philosophy, and hopefully that can get them closer to, you know, getting some postseason success again.
Gavin, you tweeted 2 days ago that Cowboys fans have become so hell-bent on blaming Jerry for everything that they fail to see a player betraying the star and turning his back on the organization. So are you team Jerry or are you team Micah? Like, you seem kind of torn here, like in the middle. Like, where's, you know, like, if you had to pick a side, which side do you pick here?
Yeah.
You know, that's so tough. I've tried to do my best to evaluate each subject's participation, you know, in this negotiation. And I think it's really hard to be totally team Jerry because of some of his, you know, horrible decisions and, you know, personal life immorality over the years. It's just like, I would never want to be a guy that's identified as pro Jerry. But for me, once a holdout goes into, I'm withholding from the team, you know, these guys have legacies on the line, their jobs are on the line. He was laying down on the training table in the third preseason mm-hmm. game while some of his teammates are fighting for their careers.
Yeah, that, looks, know, bad. That looks bad.
And the organization did not appreciate that at all. Right. But, you know, the big thing for me, the big impetus for that tweet was he was flying out of DFW to find a doctor who would, you know, essentially fudge a medical report that he was actually hurt so he could still get paid while holding out. And I just thought, wow, that's borderline criminal. Like, if this was an insurance claim, he could be going to jail for fraud. You know, basically what he and his agent were trying to set up with Jalen Ramsey did in 2019 with the Jaguars. So I just thought, you know, ethically, I have a major problem with that. And just as a teammate, I don't think I'd want him back in the locker room. Now, this comes after years of insider reporting and just the kind of whispers you hear that, you know, he's not a big social guy in the locker room. He's not somebody that has friends. He never wanted to be at OTAs. He didn't want to practice. Like, really laying on the training table was a visual representation of how Micah Parsons had looked at, like, working and being involved with teammates pretty much since he got here.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting.
Well, I mean, there's probably guys like that on a lot of teams, right? But the fact that Jerry was a stud. He was a stud, no doubt. I'm sure he's not a great guy. But Jerry, if you believe the reports, Jerry was still willing to pay him a lot of money back in the spring when he was just dealing with Micah. He wasn't dealing with the agent. So do you think so he definitely would have paid him, you know? I mean, it might have been $5 or $7 million less than what he's getting now per year. I don't know what the numbers are, but he was willing to keep him. Do you think now that he's gone and you're getting the two first rounders and a player? Okay, you're not getting a player of Parsons' talent, obviously, but do you think that they are better off down the road, or is this going to come back to haunt them?
I mean, they're not better off for this year. Their floor for this year could go all the way down to 4 or 5 wins.
Wow.
Their run defense is atrocious. Now they can't play pass defense. They can't run the ball. They're basically hoping Dak, Pickens, and Lamb can throw them for enough points to keep them in games.
Wow.
But long term, I guess the sell would be, like, you know, could you imagine using these two first round picks along with your top 10 pick to move up and take Arch Manning? You know, could this be a generational type of trade that sets up something else that's coming months later? And in the end, we'll look at it similar to moving on from Herschel Walker, but you got this payoff. Could you use these picks immediately to address your run defense or your lack of depth at cornerback? Like, could you make trades? And now you have this cap space. But I think more importantly than that, here's where I think this could be a moment that changes and ultimately ends up with this franchise being better. It's that, you know, Brian Schottenheimer is explaining to the Jones family how football has evolved over the last decade, how much more important the running game and run defense is, you know, implementing some of the stuff that's been going on in San Francisco with the Rams and the 49ers. And, you know, when it comes to modernizing offense, to create deception, to create motion before and, you know, immediately following the snap to keep the defense thinking instead of just, you know, being predictable. What I'm getting at is Brian Schottenheimer is basically educating the Cowboys front office or ownership group and the Joneses of what modern trends are. And for the last 15 years with Jason Garrett and Mike McCarthy, the NFL has been evolving quickly, and they've been stuck in the 90s with their Coryell offense or their West Coast offense and not really paying attention. So, you know, the idea that you have to be able to stop the run, you're heavy at pass rush. The Cowboys have treated the draft like they're prospecting for highlights. You know, we want big play guys, we want jersey sales, we want SportsCenter top 10 plays, and the game has evolved back into much more trench warfare. So if you're looking for a positive spin from a Cowboys perspective, it's that, you know, they're going to actually look at trying to build a balanced defense now instead of just one that can hunt quarterbacks and take the ball away.
We're joined by Gavin Dawson, host of G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. He's on the Rude Guest Hotline. So how troubling is this image of Jerry Jones trying to circumvent agents and trying to deal with players directly and trying to get deals done without the agent being present? We know that was a big sticking point with Micah Parsons. Is this something that's popped up in the past? Is this like a one-time outlier? Is that going to be an issue as far as like attracting free agents to Dallas in the future?
No, this is what he wants to do. You know, he wants to build relationships with players and see if he can talk them into the idea of, hey, we're partners in this and you're going to be a Cowboy for life. And, you know, we need some team friendly help for you maybe on the years or, you know, what kind of options you can give us in the back half of this contract. And, you know, it's something that's worked really well for him in the past when he has good relationships. I think his problem here, as he explained it last night, was he and Parsons were going through this negotiation over a multi-day period. Micah was able to consult with his agent while they were talking in between their meetings, and he feels like they negotiated a deal. And then Mulugeta came in and said, okay, that's the new starting point for our negotiations. And that, you know, really rankled Jerry. I think Mulugeta has a history of negotiating very tough and very clever. And could you call it dirty negotiation? Sure. But inside of a negotiation, I think, you know, all bets are off and no holds are barred. So, you know, the Cowboys want to do things that way. Jerry mentioned last night that he's already touched bases with Mulugeta, and they understand it's a business and it's a game, and they don't anticipate this is going to impact future deals. But you know, I think the thing that's interesting with the Cowboys is maybe they've drawn a line in the sand that we want players that want to be here and appreciate the opportunity and the visibility of being on America's team. And if you really want to hold our feet to the fire and negotiate that hard, and, you know, possibly fake an injury to still get paid while you're holding out, then that's a pretty clear sign that you don't want to be a Cowboy. And, you know, after all the money they pushed back with Dak and then putting his contract at $60 million, like, they're legitimately in cap hell. So I think that's another part of this decision-making, was just that financially they need to find players that will give them team-friendly deals so they can get enough good players to compete. And with Micah, you know, looking for what he did, they were going to be so top-heavy. I mean, they're already looking at trying to find undrafted free agents that have been cut from other teams to be starters.
Wow.
Just because of how top-heavy they are.
So, yeah. Man, you feel like this team is a 500 team at best. Or not 500, maybe 8-win team at best this year, it sounds like. I wanted to ask you about Dak. Dak's now in year 10, making $1 billion. He might not have been a huge disappointment just in terms of regular season stats, but his postseason numbers are atrocious. You know, he's won 2 playoff games in 9 years. How do Cowboys fans feel about Dak at this point, and with all the money he makes and all of the disappointment after, you know, 12-win seasons for 3 straight years, and you just can't win big playoff games with Dak?
You know, I would say over this decade, at the beginning, it was maybe 85%. Hey, Dak can do this. Wow, I can't believe we found a Tony Romo succession plan, and this guy can run. And then, you know, you took your legs away from him about 5 years ago there with the injury, and I think that caused quite a few people. But there, I would say it's flipped now, that maybe there's 20% of people that still really believe, hey, Dak Prescott's the guy. You know, they're dug in, they're truthers. I'm sure every market deals with players like this that, you know, some fans just refuse to let go. But I think the majority of people are now sort of convinced that Dak Prescott cannot win a Super Bowl with these Cowboys the way that they team build.
Yeah.
But then the other thing just about his regular season success is, you know, with Washington getting better now, and maybe New York's actually starting to figure some stuff out, and as good as Philadelphia has been, I think it's just the realization that his regular season success was really built on playing in the NFC East during its worst 10-year window that it's ever had. And then the schedule quirks of how things fell for the Cowboys, like in Dak's runner-up MVP year, they never had to play good quarterbacks or good defenses, you know, so they ran up huge stats in the regular season, but it was really a hollow, because other than the early Zeke years and the DeMarco Murray year, like, you could never really run the ball or stop the ball. So, you know, I think it was just fool's gold, and this thing's been built in a house of cards for a long time. And for me, I'm hoping Schottenheimer can help get this thing turned around.
Curious the Dallas perspective then on Washington, because last season they're 7-5, and then they get fortunate enough to play Will Levis, Kenny Pickett, Trey Lance. Some might say that they had a fortunate run, but of course we have Jaden Daniels here and 2 impressive playoff wins. What's the Dallas perspective on Washington?
Well, you know, best coaching staff the last 10 years there, and Dan Quinn, I think there's some regret.
Nah, we're just going to let him go.
We're losing him.
We'll let him go.
Don't know what happened there in last question.
Tell him thank you, but
Sounded like he was going to give credit to Dan Quinn and think that Washington's fluky.
Yeah, well, give credit to Quinn, but give credit to Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I mean that's the number one guy for reversing your fortunes in the right direction.
I love Dan Quinn, but I think a lot of coaches could coach up number five.
Yeah,
but Mariota's the one that beat him.
Yeah.
In the last week.
Beat who?
Dallas.
The Cowboys.
When they took Jaden out after.
Okay, that's fine.
Dallas was dead.
Don't get offended. I'm just saying the Mariota. Cakes got offended.
He had half a percent.
No, that was weird.
What
by
was weird?
Me or by him?
No. By Cakes. Yeah. That was a valid point. Yeah.
He took offense to the fact that Mariota threw a game-winning touchdown
pass.
I'm
very sensitive when it comes to Jaden Daniels. Very protective. Almost as protective as his mommy.
That's hard to do.
I'm almost that protective.
You don't need to be.
That's
okay.
Hard to do.
We can tease her a little bit.
We've been talking training camp, Odyssey Sports training camp coverage brought to you nationally by Geico. Switch and save. Get more with Geico. Coming up next, we'll talk some college football. Bill Roth, the voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies, joins us next here on The Junkies.
It is the Kevin Sheehan Show. Dent Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. The Terry contract is official. It is on to New York for Washington. Joining us to help preview this season for the Commanders and a little bit of college football. We got some college football starting today. Booger McFarland, ESPN, with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in. Boog, first and foremost, man, appreciate you jumping on and making some time for us. Your reaction on Monday when the Terry McLaurin contract was official and he was staying in Washington?
Well, I think it was just like everybody else, man. It's kind of about time. I think that with all the good juju that's been going on with Washington since the new ownership and, you know, Dan Snyder's out of the way and Jaden Daniels had a tremendous season, everything's been positive. And this is kind of the one negative little something that popped up. And I think everybody kind of figured it would be taken care of, but the longer it drug out, you didn't know. And I get it. I understand both sides, receiver, 30 years old, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's where you have to use, kind of get away from those formulas and use some human nature, you know, and just say, okay, look at what Terry has kind of meant to this franchise. Look at what he's done. Look at what he meant to Jaden Daniels. Look at his leadership qualities. And like when you add all those things in, I think he got what he deserved. And, you know, now he's got to go out and produce to that level, which I don't have any doubt that he will. But long way of saying, man, I think everybody around the league is happy about this deal. And I think it's been received very well.
Do you believe that Terry is a top 10 receiver in this league?
I don't. I think the numbers say it. I think when you look at how he plays, yeah, absolutely. Like he may not be one to four, but there's no doubt you're going to put him somewhere between 4 and 10, depending on your flavor, what you like. No doubt about it.
So with that said, then, you get Terry obviously coming to play with Jaden. They bring in Deebo Samuel. What do you think this offense can look like after a successful year last year with these two guys?
Well, that's going to depend on how they run the football. Like, if you just understand what Dan Quinn wants to do and how they want to play, we make a lot about Jaden Daniels, and rightfully so. But he can't do it all. Like, right. I don't think you want to get into a situation where this quarterback is throwing it 35 times and then running it 20. So where do you find the touches to go elsewhere? I understand everybody likes the young backs that you guys got up there. You trade away Brian Robinson because maybe he doesn't fit the scheme. He's more of a pounder than he is kind of a slasher, which is what this offense needs. I think Deebo coming over is going to be able to take some touches. He's going to be an extension of the run game, you know, jet sweeps, quick screens. You just want to get the ball in Debo's hands in the perimeter in space. He can make people miss. He's a tough tackle. Ultimately, this team, I think, though, is going to come down to how they play defense. Who's going to rush the passer? Can you stop the run consistently? And when you get a lead, again, can you go get the quarterback? I think health is going to be very paramount on this team because you can't get Terry hurt. You know, you can't get, you know, some of your top guys on the defensive side of the football hurt because I don't think the depth is there just yet. But overall, I think if health was standing, I think people expect the team to be better. Now, that doesn't mean that the record is going to be better,
right?
But I do think people expect the team to be better.
Booger McFarland, ESPN, with us here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980. So you mentioned the defense needing to be better. The run defense was obviously a huge, huge Achilles heel for this team last year. How easy is it to go from a bad run defense one year to a good run defense the next year?
it's all mindset, man. That's what it is. Once you understand, playing run defense is simple math. Okay, if they have seven guys to block, we need eight guys in the run fit. Seven to take on the blockers, one to make the tackle. Just, you know, if we just keep it on the surface. The scheme is good. Dan is a great defensive coach. I know the scheme is good. I know everything like that. But now it comes down to mindset, man. Like football, I know we've made football soft with all these new rules and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, man, you got to hit people in the mouth. You got to be willing to be physical. And I think understanding what DQ is all about, I think now it comes down to this system. How do you play it? And do you have guys that are tough enough? And I have no doubt, based on what we saw last year, now you go into the offseason, you figure it out, you change personnel a little bit, I think they're going to be better.
How good do you think a guy like Javon Kinlaw can be, being that guy that's big, that's tough, and will hit you in the mouth?
He's big. He's athletic. I still don't think he's been unlocked yet. You know, coming out of South Carolina, man, like he is a man child. Sometimes you need a new system. Sometimes you need somebody in the ear to just to kind of bring the best out of you, man. I've been traded. I've left one team and went to another. I do think that can help, a different atmosphere. I think the positive momentum, man, and this is the thing that beyond everything else, I think Washington has going for it. I think inside that locker room, Dan is one of the best culture builders in football. And what does that mean? Because we throw that around often. What is culture? Culture is like, what's the mood, the vibe when you walk in the locker room, when the coaches are not around? Is everybody talking ball? Are we feeling ball? Are the guys getting along? Do we understand what we're trying to do? Coaches don't have to do a whole lot. They just have to tell us what to do and we get it done. Like, there is a togetherness and brotherhood, and I think they have that in Washington, and I think that's the best thing. So last year gave them a little taste of what it could be. I do think some of the personnel moves that they've made are going to help them. But all that being said, you know, when toe meets leather, man, in about 9 days,
yeah.
I think Washington is going to score plenty of points. It's going to come down to me, when quarterback drops back on the opposing team, can you go get them? You got to be able to affect the other quarterback to win in this league. And because at some point, it's going to turn into a passing game. It's a passing league. And I think their ability to affect the opposing quarterback, whether that's sacks or pressure, will ultimately dictate the record. Jaden Daniels will be outstanding. I think he'll be great. His poise, his patience, his maturity, I've seen it since LSU. It hasn't changed. It's only gotten better. I have no doubt it's going to be better this year. But he can't score and then stop people. So I think the defense is going to be the biggest factor in determining where this team goes. Because a lot of people are thinking Super Bowl.
Right.
I'm not there yet until I see where this defense is at.
Bobby Wagner is going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. When you watch him, what jumps out on the screen?
You know, we often talk about quarterbacks and how they see the field and how those guys understand the game and how the game slows down. You can say the same for a middle linebacker. Like he is at middle linebacker what some of the great quarterbacks have been. Maybe not in the standpoint of scoring touchdowns and all that, but when you think about how Peyton Manning quarterbacked our offense in Indianapolis, when you think about what Tom Brady did in New England orchestrating things, like that's what Bobby does. And we don't give him the credit. That's our fault because defense is kind of second fiddle in our mind. Everybody wants to score points. But he is as good as there have ever been at the middle linebacker position. He is he's smart. He's athletic. What he's lost maybe as far as the athletic ability, he makes up for and understanding. He's been durable. He's played a long time. And I think the thing when I talked about the culture earlier, he's a culture builder. Like he understands what culture is about. He understands what winning is about. He's won a Super Bowl before. Like he's been on great defenses. He knows what it looks like. And when you have a young team, and by and large, everybody in the NFL has a young team because the league is younger, mm-hmm. You need that veteran or two on your team. And I'm glad DQ has Bobby because it's a lot of young guys on that team, a lot of guys 22 to 26 on that team, and they think they know it all, and I promise you they don't. You need a veteran that's 32, 33, 34 that's been in the wars that can tell the 25-year-old, hey, guy, I know you think you're made it, but we ain't done nothing yet. And that makes far more of an impact coming from Bobby than it would coming from any coach on the staff.
Talking with Booger McFarland, ESPN. Boog, just a few more for you here as we get set for week one and a little bit of college football as well I want your take on. But you mentioned guys like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and some of their competitiveness and kind of the way they handle things at the line of scrimmage. Do you see little inklings of those sorts of things in Jaden Daniels?
Yeah, well, it's early, man. Like his poise, like the one thing people continue to talk about him, like he doesn't get flustered. Like, that's what the great ones have. Like, if you look at Cam Ward this year, the one thing we said when we were at the draft and myself and Mel and Lewis were talking, like, his poise, he doesn't get sped up. And that's the hardest thing for a young quarterback to kind of grasp on is just to be patient. And Jaden has that. He had it at LSU. And I think you can attribute that to all the football he's played. He's played a ton of ball. And he's made a ton of starts. He's seen a lot. Like, he's been in Death Valley when Alabama came in there. Like, he's beaten them. Like, he's been in the most hostile environments that football has to offer, and he hasn't blinked. And I think that's prepared him to where he is now. Like, there's nothing, there's no stadium he's going to walk in that's going to be like it was in Baton Rouge on a Saturday night when Alabama was on the other side. I'm sorry, NFL, there's no atmosphere that's going to be like that because the college game is just a little bit different from the crowd standpoint. NFL is more of a corporate crowd, unless you're in Green Bay or Kansas City. But to my point, he has been in environments that are way hotter than what he sees every Sunday. And so there's no doubt his poise is off the charts, and I think you're going to continue to see that and see how patient he is and just see how, you know, we often say the game slows down. What does that mean? That means that the quarterback sees things so much faster. Obviously, the game doesn't slow down. He just sees things faster because his mind is processing it faster. And then you can attribute that to some of the things or some of the players that you mentioned, because that's how Manning was. That's how Brady was. And those guys had to do it because they were slower than molasses. He doesn't have to do it because he's a great athlete. So now you got the best of both worlds.
I mean, Burrow has that same thing. Is it something in the water at LSU that has these guys ready to play and kind of process at an NFL level as soon as they jump into the league?
I just think they've played a lot of football, man. Burrow transferred from Ohio State. Jaden from Arizona State. They played a lot of football. Like, they've been around. They've seen a lot. Experience is the best teacher in life, guys. I don't know if you've heard that before, but it is. You can go in any classroom in America. The only thing that's really going to help you with this thing called life and football is to practice and to experience it and to keep living. And both of those guys that you mentioned have done that.
A few college football questions here for you, Boog. I texted Jacob Hester about this when I saw this, but I'd like to get your take. How big of a deal is it that Garrett Nussmeier is wearing 18?
Well, it's a huge deal personally for him because, you know, 18 is a leadership award. It's a situation or it's an achievement that a lot of people want. It just lets you know how your peers on that team feel about you, how the coaching staff feels about you. And it's one of those things that you would be put in a select group forever. And so it's a huge deal when the guy that touches the ball every single play is viewed as the leader of the team.
Book, appreciate the time, my friend. Hope to do this again soon.
All good, man. Anytime.
That is Booger McFarland at ESPN. Some really good stuff in there from Boog.
All righty, John Oran, Puck News, joins us to talk about the NFL. Really some TV rights when it comes to the NFL. John, who's mad at who right now? Give us the latest.
Oh, everybody's mad at everybody right now. I'm most interested in who's mad at who in college football. I know that you asked about the NFL, but how about Ohio State and Barstool Sports, David Portnoy? That's a great story, isn't it?
Yeah. So the latest there is Ohio State's basically saying, no, we didn't ban him. You guys are silly geese. What happened?
Basically, David Portnoy said that he was banned from going inside of Ohio State. Ohio State's AD said that he wasn't banned. And what this basically is to bring it back to media, Portnoy is about to start a career as an on-air talent for Fox Sports on their college football pregame show. This Saturday happens to be Lee Corso's last game on College Game Day on ESPN. And all anybody's talking about, at least on my timeline, is Ohio State and Dave Portnoy. And so it's Dave Portnoy is creating a lot of controversy that's going to guarantee some tune-in for Fox's pregame show. This is exactly why Fox went out and hired Portnoy and why Fox ended up cozying up to Barstool.
I was going to say, isn't this kind of the way these companies are trending? Is it's It's the clicks and the eyeballs and the social media presence. Like, it's these are not traditional Big J journalists or even traditional analysts at the desk. You know, I think College Game Day had, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, it was like a famous Peloton instructor that they hired. And, you know, you've got Portnoy. Like, I think that's what we're doing, right? We're getting personalities from other realms.
Yeah, and College Game Day, of course, has Pat McAfee as sort of that's their version of Dave Portnoy over there. But that's what's so interesting about Lee Corso to me, is that Lee Corso is – his whole career has been much more as like an entertainer than it has been sort of a X's and O's analyst on set. So the whole idea about college football pregame shows is all about the entertainment and getting crowds into it, much more so than trying to decide who's going to win because of various analyses.
What will the ESPN-NFL relationship look like?
That's a good question. There's really not a good answer to that right now. I can tell you that some of the things that I'm going to be taking a look at is ESPN right now, they do have a really big editorial arm, and they have an investigative unit that writes really good and tough stories about ESPN's league partners, like the NBA and the NFL, the college football. What I'm going to be looking at is to see if they still get the same amount of support as they've always gotten at ESPN, or whether that shrinks a little bit. I don't think that ESPN is going to necessarily get any better games because their relationship with the NFL. The NFL is poised to take a 10% ownership stake in ESPN, but the NFL also happens to have an ownership stake in CBS as well, which is another NFL partner. So this is the NFL sort of propping up a little bit traditional media, especially as everybody's going to streaming. And we just don't know yet. We're waiting to see how the NFL is going to treat these networks or media companies any differently.
How about this dispute? YouTube, Fox, we ended our show with this news last night that dropped that there's a carriage fight now. It seems like no matter what I have, Fox or CBS is fighting with somebody constantly. Is there any chance I'm going to miss Ohio State, Texas on Saturday?
There's a small chance that you're going to miss it. My bet is they're going to come up with a deal right before that game. But what's unique about this is that just last week, Fox launched a direct-to-consumer app called Fox One. So if they don't come to a deal, you can download Fox One. For $20, you'll be able to stream the game. And I think YouTube has said that if Fox drops its channels, they'll rebate you $10. So there are other options for you without actually getting rid of YouTube TV. But I've been covering these types of fights for literally three decades. They're going to come to an agreement. At some point, they are going to come to an agreement.
Real quick, not necessarily football related. Baseball broadcasting rights. Locally, it's still kind of up in the air. It seems like now there's maybe one contender. Well, I'd love for you to get into that. But just in general, where does baseball broadcasting rights go?
Are you talking about nationally or for the Nationals?
Yeah, local here for the Nationals, but then nationally as well.
Locally for the Nationals, I keep hearing Masson is the people I know that work for Masson sound pretty confident that they'll be able to renew a deal with the Nats. Which I find to be interesting because I would think that Ted Leonsis and Monumental would be the most likely ones to get those rights. But that's still sort of up in the air to see what happens with that. Nationally, Fox and TBS still have the top two packages, and they're going to have them for the next 3 years going through 2028. ESPN pulled out of its package, and you're going to see Sunday Night Baseball move to NBC next season. You're going to see the wild card playoff round. That's going to move to Peacock and NBC next season. And what's most interesting is the home run derby that ESPN always carried. That's heading over to Netflix. So you'll be able to watch the home run derby on Netflix next year. ESPN's going to stick with baseball. They're going to have some midweek game Wednesday night, maybe, or I'm not sure which night. I don't think baseball knows quite yet which night. And also through the ESPN app, which also launched last week, you will be able to stream out-of-market games, MLB.tv, through the ESPN app. So that's a pretty big deal for ESPN.
John, awesome. As always, good insight. Love
you,
talking
buddy.
About the media and sports with you. Thank you.
I feel like I just passed my final exam, guys. Thanks.
Love it.
Yes, you did, with flying colors.
Boop, 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 boop. B-Mitch, this might surprise you, but Brendan Porath actually texted me last night to request Turn Down for What as his walk-up song.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a big Little John guy. Brendan, what's up, dude?
That's absolutely not true. That's absolutely not true. Not a terrible tune, but it's fine. Wouldn't be my choice.
Our friend Brendan Porath, head of content for Fried Egg Golf and co-host of the Shotgun Start podcast. You see him all the time on TV. Shotgun Start now on CBS Sports Network. Dude, I know you've had a busy week. Thank you for making time for us. Ryder Cup picks come down. Keegan doesn't take himself. What do you make of all of it?
I mean, it was an agonizing choice. It was the right choice. I feel sort of terrible for him. He's been one of the 12 best American players this year and would be a pick in any other year in which his name was not also the captain. The irony is he was given that captaincy sort of as a, I don't want to say a make good, but a nice little treat for getting snubbed last time. He got legitimately snubbed in 2023 when they went to Italy. And it was documented on the Netflix show, and sort of like that pain and the snub became more high profile, and there were pictures with it all. Mm. And the PGA of America was like, all right, why don't we make you the captain? And sort of a make good really for that. And he was excluded. He's not a social guy with, you know, and the guys were younger. He didn't fall into the age group of a Thomas and a Spieth and Ricky Fowler. He was just older, more of a loner, and he didn't have the sort of the political network to get on the team. And so they give him a captaincy and that becomes the primary blocker to him getting it this year. So this treat or this make good ends up like what keeps him out of playing. And it's all he's really wanted to do since 2014 was last time he was on the team. He just means so much to him. He's one of like the sort of a heartbeat and emotional leader, firecracker really in those 2012, 2014 teams. And then, he couldn't pick himself. He gets to this situation where too many guys started playing well towards the end of the year, end of the summer, and there were too many better options. And this notion of playing captain just isn't a tenable one in 2025. Being a captain is this massive time suck, massive organizational pressure that it's really challenging. You need to be a lock, a qualifier, a lock, a top five American to do it. And even then, it's not advisable. The Euros would have been celebrating if he decided to play and captain. And so he made the right choice, no matter how painful it was.
But if he goes out there and they win and they have a great showing, they destroy the Europeans, then wouldn't that give him a little bit of some grace? Like he'll feel good about it?
Yeah, I think so, but they can't let the result dictate the process right now. Like, and I think even worse or even riskier than that would be the insane pressure of him playing and playing poorly and then the captaincy going sideways. Like he's on the course. You got to be setting the afternoon lineups. Remember they do the double session.
Yeah.
And that's going on. They're setting the lineups while those first four matches are being played. And he can't do that if he's playing. So you're automatically like putting a cap on the amount of matches he plays. He can't do two matches in a day, probably. He just can't. And, you know, maybe the 12th, 11th guy on your team isn't going to be tabbed for that anyways, but why automatically put that cap on someone before they even get to the week? You know, it's too much of a job. And I get it. If he plays and plays well, that would be an incredible story, but I don't think you can let that potential outcome dictate the right process now, a month before.
Talking with our friend Brendan Porath here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can listen to Brendan and Andy on the Shotgun Start podcast. So Keegan, I think, does the admirable thing, probably the right thing. I kind of wanted him to do it just because it would have been nuts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what do we think of the 12 that they've picked? Six we knew, the auto qualifiers, and then the six captains picks.
Well, that, you make a good point. Like, PGA of America, for what I understand, was really pushing for him to pick himself. Because at the end of the day, this is like an exhibition. It doesn't mean a ton. Does it? Like, you can't, I guess you could say the Olympic basketball is an exhibition, right? They're not playing for money. But, of course, that doesn't mean it's not competitive. It is a three-day exhibition. It is an entertainment product. It is a booming television business. And the better story, more interesting story is if he picks himself. And I think the PGA of America was secretly hoping, if not outwardly pushing him to do it.
Yeah, well, until things go wrong.
Right.
They wouldn't
right.
support him after it goes wrong. I promise you that. When he becomes the butt of every joke.
That's true. And think about, like, this isn't any just any home game. It's New York. It's Long Island. They're pretty vicious, even when it's not an adversarial. It's just 150 guys playing a PGA championship.
Yeah.
Like, think about, like, a bad Yankees manager or a Knicks coach or a Giants coach, like, and it's going – or Jets, it's going bad. Like, they get all over them. Oh, yeah. And so if he was a captain and started to go bad and he's playing, like, it's not just any home game that's in Wisconsin or Minnesota or something like that. It could have been ugly. And so – I think it would have been more entertaining for him to be the captain, but what we ended up with was Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, Ben Griffin,
Bryson,
Patrick Cantlay. Yeah, Bryson made it on points, which is kind of amazing. So he made it on points with only because half his live events don't count, so he made it on like eight events only.
Damn,
kind of crazy.
So how does that work? Is there any strife with Bryson, or that's all out the way?
No, it's all good. They've done that really since Liv was created. They figure, like, look, we need the 12 best guys, figure out a way. Now, it's not a PGA Tour event, so they're able to do it. Like, President's Cup is owned and operated by the PGA Tour. Those guys can't play that one. PGA of America, I know it's probably confusing. They're different. It's different from the PGA Tour, so they're allowed to bring in Liv guys. European Tour has figured out how to get their Liv guys. Jon Rahm is going to play for Europe. So there's no real strife or anything. Koepka played last time. Bryson's a unique guy. I don't know that like he gets along with a lot of the Americans on his team, whether they're tour members or live players. Doesn't really matter. He's just kind of a quirky dude.
Yeah,
but,
very much.
They'll figure out a partnership for him and let him play. And he should have been on the team. No question that. But we have, like with these picks, Keegan would have been a compelling option because we've kind of lost some of the characters. On the American side, like Spieth isn't in it. Brooks Koepka wasn't good enough. Ricky Fowler wasn't good enough. Phil Mickelson is off the stage. Tiger is off the stage. And that was always going to happen. But this had always been – Beth Page is, the biggest Ryder Cup ever because it's New York. The Ryder Cup is big business now. They had targeted this one for years. It was going to be 24 before the pandemic hit. Now it's 25. But they had been targeting this one. It's going to be the biggest and best ever. It was always supposed to be Phil's captaincy. Mm. Now, think about that, the Long Island crowds and Phil just whipping him up. He lit that on fire, not a chance to do it. And so we've lost a little bit of the American characters involved with this team. That said, it's still a 12th best. It's the best outcome given form and the seasons they've had.
Go ahead, B.
Who you think is favorite? What side?
The Americans are, right. For sure. They're absolutely...
I think the Euros are good, dude.
They're great. They're totally locked in. But the Ryder Cup, the dirty little secret of the Ryder Cup, it hasn't really been competitive since 2012, since Medina in Chicago when they knocked us off at home. And the home advantage is substantial. It's setting up the course. It's the crowd. For whatever reason, they haven't really been close Ryder Cups in over a decade now. And so – being at home, they're absolutely favored. That said, Rory McIlroy said the hardest thing to do in golf, one of the great achievements he has left or he wants to do in his career is win another away Ryder Cup. And they're set up as well as you possibly could. It's a continuity thing. They have the same captain as last time, same captaincy, assistant captaincy group. They are going to come with probably the exact same roster as 2023, substituting one Højgaard twin for another Højgaard twin, so it's essentially the same 12 guys. And yeah, they're as set up as they could be. They're playing well, more or less. Most of them are playing well, and yeah, they're set up to knock them off for sure.
I remember a long, I don't know how long ago this was, but didn't like Boo Weekly have this like epic Ryder Cup run when he was, I don't remember how long ago that was, maybe 10 years ago or something, but Boo Weekly was hardly like a household name and then had this epic Ryder Cup run that really vaulted him into like a different category. Is there somebody you think that could do that this year? I kind of think Ben Griffin might be the crazy ballsy guy that could like emerge.
He would probably be the one if there is a candidate. Boo Weekly, I think that was 08, Valhalla Ryder Cup. Damn. They brought those like good old Kentucky boys, him and J.B. Holmes. He was like riding his driver like a horse off the tee box of Valhalla, doing all this goofy stuff. And then you had these like proper British guys looking at him like offended that he was acting out.
Yeah, he did the Happy Gilmore.
Yes, riding the bull. And yeah, it's like Ian Poulter was all pissed off. But I think Griffin would be the one candidate. It's kind of an incredible story. He had quit golf and was going into being a mortgage officer like 4 years ago.
Wow.
You know, last time a Ryder Cup was at home in the U.S., he had given up on golf and writing mortgages, and now he's one of the 12 best Americans on the team. I'm not familiar with this, but apparently he's big on TikTok with all the youth. So maybe he is a guy that pops off the page. He creatine overdosed, he said.
Yeah, B, have you heard that story?
He what?
Yeah, tell B-Mitch that story, dude.
So at Baltimore, Kays Valley, 2 weeks ago, he started with like a triple or quadruple bogey, four-putted from 4 feet, then a double, and then a bogey. He was like six over through his first three holes, and he claimed he overdosed on creatine, like on the first hole. Like he got a snowball of creatine in his shake. He's been big on creatine. He credits it with like him getting much better at golf again this year. And he said he overdosed. Like, no, we've had a bunch of gym guys and trainers. Like, that's not possible. You can't
do that. Yeah, overdose on it.
No. I think he was just dehydrated and shaky. He definitely was messed up because he shot, like, he made, like, 10 birdies after going eight over through his first three. But, yes, that made him pretty popular amongst, like, the gym guys and added a little bit to his profile. So he could be the guy that pops for the American.
Keep talking about all that creatine. He might get popped. He may think he's doing something else.
I don't know why this is personal. I've never met the guy or anything. I'm really glad Cam Young got in. I know he's a New York guy. Like, the way he hits the ball a mile, I imagine he's just a good setup for Bethpage, right?
He better be straight.
He's pretty straight. He's a great course fit. He hammers the ball. He's from New York. He's from Mets. They tried to say some English media guy got confused, thought he was from the Bronx because he went to Fordham Prep. He's like, he grew up in like the nicest country club.
He's like from West
definitely
West.
Not from the Bronx. Yes, not from the Bronx. But he is a New Yorker, has played Bethpage a ton, won a junior, set like records there when he was a junior. And it's super good course fit. He crushes the ball, which is what you want big boppers for Bethpage. The greens aren't that interesting. You know, putting sort of, you know, equalized there. The other thing is like Europe players, there used to be a real distinction between the games, right? The Euros were kind of straight and shorter and played links golf and were more creative and would shape shots, and Americans were just power, and they would just hammer the ball. Well, that's like, it's all sort of consolidated. Everybody's the same. That's how you succeed in golf, is you hammer the ball. Yep. And the Euros are just as long and powerful as the Americans. You talk about Rory McIlroy, Ludwig, Hovland, people like that. It's all a power game. And so that sort of distinction between preferred style or play doesn't really exist anymore. And so they're just as well suited. Most of their players are just as well suited to Bethpage as ours are, but few are better suited than Cameron Young. He should be, the guy's a dial tone. I mean, he's not going to wow you with any of his commentary, and he's probably not going to incite any drama. Yeah, that's right. He's just deadpan guy all the time, but his game is exciting, so he's not going to be in there mixing it up or anything, but he does hit it a long way, and he should perform. He's been playing really well.
All right. BP, thanks for the time, man. I know you're going to be busy. We'll be listening to Shotgun Start.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
That's our friend Brendan Porath. Give him a follow at Brendan Porath, P-O-R-A-T-H. Really, really good golf content from the Friday Shotgun Start crew.